This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
That keyword you need coming up for your chance to win a $500 e-Visa gift card. The Jump Shot Jackpot giveaway courtesy of Folsom Lake Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. That keyword coming up at the very top of the hour as we welcome in our insider from the insiders, James Hamm. James, you were at the press conference today. Scott Perry introduced as the newest general manager of the Sacramento Kings. Your takeaways, or let's start, your first impressions of Scott Perry and the press conference. Of course, it's not your first impressions of Scott Perry. He was here before you covered him, as that was acknowledged during the press conference. But your first impressions of him now as the general manager.
Yeah, you know what? Like, look, I think that when you look at when Vivek brings in somebody new, and, you know, this is, was it the fourth front office we've had, right? Pete D'Alessandro, followed by Vlade, followed by Monty and Wes, yeah. And now, of course, where we're at with Scott. I think that there's always, like a year or two where Vivek does his best to be hands-off. I'm like, he's going to be in Scott's ear all the time. Like, I know, like, calling Monty McNair 2-3 times a day, every day, right? Like, he's going to have to deal, Scott's going to have to deal with the same thing. But at the same time, I've always felt like early on with, whether it's a GM or it's a coach, that Vivek does actually, like, give someone an opportunity to put their stamp on something. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's, again, you know, Monty McNair getting to choose which head coach he wanted to hire last time around, whether it was Mike Brown or Mark Jackson or one of the other coaches that they brought in. I've always felt that there's always that opportunity for someone to really make a big impact early on. And if you can build positive momentum, I think it keeps Vivek at bay a little bit. And so I'm hoping that that's what we're going to see from Scott. I really like him. I've said this before, and, you know, I think he's a great communicator. I think people saw in the press conference today, what I've seen of him is just his, like, command of the room, his ability to almost, like, lull you in a little bit with his charm, his Southern accent and everything. He's just, like, a very nice dude, a cool dude. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody gets that right away. He's also a guy who's had a lot of success in the league. And so I'm excited to see where he goes from here, because he's got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, no, a lot of the talk around here, and understandably so, because the team isn't winning and he's the owner and all this other stuff, is, you know, do all this stuff, you know, so Vivek leaves you alone. But how about do all this stuff so you win? Like, there's too much emphasis on that. Like, make the right decisions. Get this team going in a positive way, whether that's making the playoffs, whether that's acquiring young talent and all this other stuff. Get them going in a positive way, because that's what's best for the team, not in the organization, not because we don't want Vivek involved. Like, Vivek, I could be wrong, but if Vivek wouldn't have been involved, if Monty was doing a better job, and maybe he would have, I don't know. But they, like, that seems to be, like, kind of what you talk about. Like, it gives you an opportunity to do a good job and show some results. And if you don't, that's where his downfall becomes, is he wants to incorporate him stuff. But if you're doing a good job and things are working and they're winning basketball games, seems like everything might be cool. So make the right moves, do what you got to do, just so you win. Like, just so you're doing what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Vivek becomes more and more visible as things go further and further south. And maybe that's because some of the people that he's hired become less and less visible as things go south. And so it just makes it seem like he's more part of it. But I would tell people, like, straight up, like, Vivek has his, like, hands on every single thing that's going on. Like, he is, like, in it all the time. we just hear more about the negative of it when things start to go really south. And that's not to say, like, you know, that he's going to give Scott Perry a blank check to go do whatever he wants. I don't think that that's going to be the case. But I do think that Scott is going to have some leeway that even like guys like Monty and Wes probably didn't. Even a guy like Vlade, because, you know, while everyone likes Vlade, he didn't have the overall experience. Like, Scott walks in with cachet. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a guy that it's not just, you know, you have to look at like the ties that we've seen with Joe Dumars. Like, the Joe Dumars like arrival in Sacramento, it's part of the Scott Perry situation. You know, Scott Perry and Joe Dumars worked together with the Pistons. Like, that's how all of a sudden Joe Dumars is part of the Sacramento story. And so, like, look, I think this is a guy who has a vision. He knows exactly what his goal is to build a sustainable winner here. And I think if we go back to 2017 and just look at that small snippet, you saw a plan. And, you know, it's easy to pick it apart afterwards and say, well, you know, two or three of your draft picks didn't work out. The free agent signings that you went out and got really didn't have the impact that you thought they might, whether George Hill lived up to his end of the bargain, or, you know, year two of Zebo, where they just told Zebo, go ahead and leave. We don't need you here. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. But I think there's something too, like when you're trying to build something, you have to be there long enough to see through like step one, step two, step three. And unfortunately, Scott wasn't here for that. So, you know, like, again, I live in a lake community where everything is done in like weird ways. And we had a guy who came in who's a general manager of the lake, and he set up a contract where every year, like all the main roads would get repaved or, you know, whatever. And then every year, every like 3 years, every side street would get redone, right? Mm-hmm. Well, then he had to leave and went to go do a military commitment. He came back, they broke the contract, all the roads look like hell, and everyone's like, well, what happened to that contract? It's like, well, you didn't see it through. And that's exactly what I kind of feel like what we saw from Scott Perry's first time around, is that you just didn't let, he wasn't here long enough to see it through, but also the people who were left there to sort of continue what he was building just did not continue the build that they should have built. Because, you know, we get to the second year, and that's when you see that team take off, the young team that wins 39 games under Dave Yeager. Well, that team is set up to find some success, because George Hill and Vince Carter and Zach Randolph were in the locker room the year before teaching 10 first and second year players how to be adults, how to be NBA basketball players, and how to handle yourself. So we see the success the next year, but again, then the whole Brandon Williams thing happens, and, you know, Dave Yeager gets fired and everything changes direction again.
So Scott has a chance to see this through. He said something today that I really liked. He talked about his 3-month job interview that he had 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And there were people who had an issue with the process. They had an issue with the way that this all came about for Sacramento. The very quick firing of Monty McNair following the loss to the Dallas Mavericks, and then the very, very quick hiring of Scott Perry essentially the next day. Did that idea of, yeah, he's been here, yeah, I guess maybe in a roundabout way he did interview for this job for 3 months. Like, did that give, and I don't feel like you were one of the people who were really critical of the decision to do it this way, but do you think that gave anyone any comfort? Like, they didn't just draw a name out of a hat. Like, they know this guy and they know what he can do. That's why they picked him. That's why they moved on to him so quickly.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll say this, like, Scott Perry's name's been floating around in Sacramento for like 6 weeks.
Sure.
Monty McNair potentially going back to the Houston Rockets to work, you know, where he came from. He spent 13 years with the Rockets. His family's there, you know, wife's family, all that mm-hmm. stuff. Like, that's been around for weeks and mm-hmm. weeks. So while we see this weird moment where, again, I'm in the locker room when Monty McNair gets fired, and then the next morning you wake up and, you know, on the way to work, I'm confirming while I'm driving that Scott Perry is a new general manager. All of this stuff happened so quickly. Realistically, it didn't. This was a plan. So there was no, oh, they lost that game, and so Monty's out. No, Monty was out the whole time.
He was just fired really quickly because of the way they lost the game. You don't even get to sleep on it. We just lost by 20. You're fired.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they were just waiting for the final bell.
Sure.
And, you know, I think everyone knew, like, even if they made the playoffs and just got worked over, like what we're seeing from Memphis right now.
Yeah.
Like, if that was the case, still, Monty, I believe, would have been out.
I think so, too.
Now, part of this is that, you know, they needed a new change. And, you know, there's a reason why Wes Wilcox left early.
Mm-hmm.
But I think part of it is also, too, that I don't know that Monty wanted to continue doing this. Like, I think he felt handcuffed by, like, what happened here at the end. Like, I do not believe that firing Mike Brown was ultimately his decision. I don't believe that trading De'Aaron Fox was his decision 100%. I don't believe that Zach LaVine arriving in Sacramento was Monty McNair's decision 100%. And so when you get to that point where it's like, hey, you keep tacking things on my resume that I don't think I want on my resume, it gets a little dark. And so, I mean, I don't think Monty didn't take like the early exit like Wes did, but I certainly think he felt like he probably could have, you know, like just the way this thing was unwinding quickly.
Do you think Vivek looks at Scott Perry as the one that got away and now he's back? Because I feel like Scott Perry is the right person for this job, for this franchise, for this owner. You know, maybe, you know, it's different in other places, but in this situation, I think Scott Perry is perfect for that. And I thought he was on the fast track to being perfect for it the first time he came through Sacramento. Do you think one of the reasons why they zeroed in on him relatively quickly when they realized they were going to move on from Monty McNair is because Vivek and maybe even Vladdy look at Scott as the one that got away and they got an opportunity to get him back now?
Yeah, I think that that's part of it. I mean, you had Scott here for such a short period of time, but in that time period, what he did was he showed everybody what a functional front office is supposed to look like. And how, you know, again, this isn't a knock on Vlade. They hired Vlade, who had zero experience working in a front office. And then he brought in Peja, and then they brought in Ken Catanella. And again, Ken is like the numbers guy. He's the guy who's working these contracts and fine-tuning the salary cap and all that stuff. Peja is like the sounding board for Vlade. And then Vlade is supposed to run this thing. But what you don't understand is that the workings of an NBA front office are very much like running an office like this. They're like six different departments that you as a general manager need to control, or as a head of basketball operations need to control. And that's why we saw like this division of labor over the last couple of years between Monty McNair and Wes Wilcox. Wes would do all the business side and Monty would do all the analytics side and run the analytics team and run some of the scouts and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But they would talk about basketball while Wes is realistically running like a gigantic business, because under the heading of this is like your strength and conditioning coach. It's your full medical staff. It's your coaching staff. It's your media relations staff. It's the cook, the chef that works for the team. It's the masseuses that work for the, like, it's a fully functioning business, that not just the business of owning the Kings or, you know, what, like selling tickets and stuff. That has nothing to do with this. What I'm talking about is like a giant practice facility filled with like six different departments of people, just like what we have here, where we have different shows and we have a sales team and we have a marketing team and then we have all these bosses and stuff. Everybody has their role, but the problem the Kings had under Vlade is that Vlade is not really a business guy. He's not someone who's running all this stuff. So they used guys like Mike Bratz to do that originally, and then they brought in Brandon Williams, which ended up being a disaster. But that's what Scott can do, but he's also a basketball mind on top of that. And so I think he's going to have a couple of roles here, but I feel like he's going to be the guy who's in charge of everything. And the guy who's underneath him, whoever he hires to be his assistant GMs, whether it's one or two, or they bring in a director of player personnel or whatever, all of those pieces are going to be attached to Scott in some way. There are going to be people that he trusts, that he believes in, that have been in the business. And that's not to say that one of the guys or two of the guys that are here right now won't, you know, make the cut. Mm-hmm. But like the inner workings of that franchise need to be on the basketball side. Scott Perry has to be the one who hires those people and has trust in those people, just like Doug Christie should be the guy, if he's going to be the head coach, who hires his assistants and has trust in what's happening there.
The Jump Shot Jackpot giveaway is courtesy of Folsom Lake Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Head over to ESPN 1320 right now and enter the keyword Kings. Enter the keyword Kings right now over at ESPN1320.com. for your chance to win a $500 eVisa gift card. Again, enter the keyword Kings over at ESPN1320.com. It's the Jump Shot Jackpot giveaway courtesy of Folsom Lake Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, home of the big guy, Vince Bloom. Big deal that Vivek wasn't front and center today. Hammer?
What's that?
Big deal that Vivek wasn't front and center today.
I thought it was interesting that he wasn't there at all. Like, to be honest, I think it would have been a distraction, but I kind of feel like this was Scott Perry's moment. And if you're going to empower him and put him out in front of everybody, mm-hmm. that's it. But, you know, like, I don't miss the days of Vivek having his own nameplate up there and being part of, because I think, especially at this point, it would have been a distraction. It kind of would have felt like if we had Vivek there, it would have really felt like that weird press conference we had, before they announced, before we got like Zach LaVine and Jonas Valanciunas for a press conference. We had that other Monty McNair press conference where he explained the firing of Mike Brown 6 weeks earlier. I feel like it would have like completely derailed the press conference today. Mm-hmm. Because if Vivek's up there, then anything is fair game. And there's plenty that you could hit him with. And all of a sudden, Scott becomes a secondary person in a very, very weird and potentially ugly, like, sort of discussion with an owner.
Yeah, Dane brought that up. You're talking about it too. There's no way he should have been there in this setting. You want to have a separate one, even later. I don't know if I'd even want that before Scott gets involved, but if he ever decided to talk to the local media again, which I don't think he will anytime soon, that's something that you do separately or randomly.
The time to do it is when you fired Monty. It's the next morning, instead of having it break already that Scott Perry's getting hired, is if you're going to have a Vivek Ranadive press conference, you have to do it that morning.
But does that serve any positive purpose at this point with Vivek?
I don't think so. Like, again, like holding someone accountable is one thing, but like, what are you going to do? He's not stepping down. Mm-hmm. Like, I know so many people, we got to move. We got to get a new owner. You got to sell. Like, I don't live in the world where, you know, the Kings are going to acquire Kevin Durant tomorrow. I live in a world of reality. And one of the realities that I live in is Vivek Ranadive is going to own this team until he decides he doesn't want to own it anymore, or he hands it to one of his kids, or something else happens. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the reality we live in, and that's how I move forward. And I know a lot of fans want to be angry and stuff about that, but again, I don't know when we'll talk to him, because anyone watching the Phoenix Suns and Matt Ishbia go out and talk to the media, that's a bona fide disaster every time he opens his mouth.
Yeah.
And it's just also one of those things where it's like, because Dirk is back in the chat and he says, and I understand people who feel this way. They want Vivek to come out and say, here was the mistake and here's what we're going to do to fix it. That's fine. And if that makes you feel better, that's cool. But if they're 30 and 52 next year, nobody's going to care that he said, here was the mistake and here's what we're going to do to fix it. Just like him not speaking and they go 52 and 30. Nobody gonna care that he didn't speak. Mm-hmm. Like, it's and it's just, maybe it's just me. I don't want to project my feelings onto others, but it is about whether they win or lose, not all the fluff on the side.
I think another thing fans sometimes forget is sometimes reality isn't as fun as the fantasy you created.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like the reality of it. Look, I hired a general manager. It didn't work. Oh, he's not taking accountability. What you want him to say is, okay, guys, I meddled in everything. I literally did everything wrong. I had puppets all over the place. If he's not saying what you think Vivek Ranadive is, you're not going to be happy. There is literally nothing this man could do, good or bad, to change your mind. So there's no point. James, Hunter, everyone's, there's no point in him being out there. And at this point, I wholeheartedly agree with James. It just would have been a distraction if he's there. Now, if he's, you know, on the side and Scott comes walking down, you know, the four little stairs and shakes Vivek's hand and they walk off into a room together.
Couple of pictures and then he walks off.
Yeah, maybe there's a little something for Sean and Jake and Matt and you get your, you know, get the shot for the King's beat and you keep it moving. But I don't know if people would even be happy. Oh, why didn't he talk? Like, he couldn't win.
Well,
so why bother?
That, and I think everybody knows, like, when he has talked, it usually does not work out the way that anyone hoped that it would.
Which is why he stopped talking, that goddamn Sam Amick.
Well, maybe that, but even
Sam,
like,
Amick, to his text, he pissed off a lot of people with that article.
Yeah, years ago, I wrote the, for ESPN, I wrote the, he wants a jazz band leader.
Mm-hmm.
Not a Sousa marching band leader. I sat in like his, it was at old Arco 2. It was in the owner's lounge that they had built. And it's like all white couches. I felt like I was at Damien's house again. And
okay.
Except for all white leather couches. It was like, you're just sitting there like, oh, this is pretty cool. And he just sat there and I tried to like maneuver him around to like move away from what he was saying, because I thought that there was more there, and I thought he also didn't realize how badly it was coming across. Mm-hmm. And there was no moving him, you know, and like he has a very, very interesting way about him. He's very, very intelligent. But he also, like, he ends up like sort of getting himself in a little bit of trouble. And, you know, I've talked about this before. Years ago, we had this moment where I was standing watching Summer League basketball. And it was me and John Santiago, my old partner at Cowbell Kingdom. And Vivek and Mark Masteroff came up and stood behind us. And we're like, hey, how's it going, guys? And they're good, good. And Vivek said, hey, he tapped us on the shoulder and was like, what did you guys think of the Darren Collison signing? And I'm like, I kind of looked down. I'm like, how should we approach this? Mm-hmm. And John turns around and goes, oh, that was horrible. And he goes, what do you mean? He goes, well, you should have just signed Isaiah Thomas. He goes, oh, well, Isaiah is not a starting point guard in the NBA. And I turned around and said, well, he was for your team. Like, what do you mean he's not a starting point guard? He goes, well, we were worried we were going to spend all that money on a guy who'd be a bench player. And it was like, okay, well, what about last season when you signed Carl Landry, a bench player, to a 3-year, $24 million deal to come off the bench? And then he's got nothing. But he was so caught off guard that we were not on board with the signing that he was like shook. And it was just this realization that a lot of people around him just like feed him a bunch of stuff that they want to him to believe. But then also, like, there is not maybe someone keeping a reality check happening behind the scenes where not everyone will view every transaction that you do as something that's positive. Mm-hmm. And it was just, he was like blown away. You could see like the confusion, like, no, like I did something good. It's like, I think I even said, well, you know, realistically you had enough salary cap space. You could have just signed them both and let them compete and show you who's a starting point guard. How about that? And it was like this really, really strange moment where it was like, okay, first of all, you're being led astray by people who don't know basketball well enough at all to be making these decisions. Like, I don't have enough disdain for, you know, the levels of disdain for Pete D'Alessandro that I have.
Yeah. And it's funny you say that, because you tell that story and all that I hear is, this is everything Pete told him.
Yep.
Vivek isn't sitting there saying, you know what, I don't think I like, don't know that much about basketball to be like, Isaiah's not a starting point guard. He's a damn pizza guy. He's averaging 20 points per game in your arena.
He 20 and 7.
He probably thinks he's great. And this guy, Pete D'Alessandro, the basketball guy, comes in there and says, yeah, it's all cute. That's not a starting point guard.
You know what the most amazing – this is what people think about Sacramento. The most amazing thing about Pete D'Alessandro to me, he got another job.
He got two more jobs. He's with the Orlando Magic right now.
And he was with San and – who was he
no,
with
No, he was with Denver was when Denver. They hired Mike.
Denver, that's right. Denver to Orlando. Yeah. This man got – this. He kept getting employed. That's how lowly people think of Sacramento and this franchise and Vivek Ranadive. Well, it can't be Pete's fault. It can't be Pete's fault. So we'll hire him to run our Denver Nuggets team or our Orlando Magic team or whoever.
Well, I'll also tell you that, I mean, that was his first, you know, after his first year on the job, Vivek. He had just bought the team the year before. So, again, he's gotten better about either not espousing those types of, like, ideas in front of people or he's just never, like, nobody puts a camera in his face anymore because we're kind of, you know, like, it's... there's always someone with him to make sure that doesn't happen. So, yeah, again, like you're going to make mistakes, especially as like a young owner when you're first taking over a team. And I think that that was the first one that was just like, holy cow, you made a colossal mistake. And then like, you don't know how to get out of it sometimes.
That guy did everything wrong.
Feels like it.
What did Pete do right?
Oh, man.
He even didn't he hold a
I could
didn't
be
he
wrong.
Hold a town hall after the Mike Malone firing?
He went on the radio and did a town hall with handpicked questionnaire with fans to ask questions.
Didn't he? I mean, I'm pretty sure he was calling fans.
Come on, man.
Oh no, he got on a he got on the bus. The Kings used to run a bus where they would load up a bunch of season ticket holders and drive them to the games at Golden State.
That's what we're working on here.
He got on that bus with the fans and then started talking trash about Isaiah Thomas while he was still on the team to the fans on the bus. So, yeah.
This guy was a bum.
The levels
he was a
of,
certified bum.
The levels of, like, I can be a hothead. You guys know that. I don't know when someone is lying to you and they know that you know what they're saying is a lie, but they keep telling it to you even though they know that you know. Mm-hmm. Like there's no question. And you're just looking at them like, yeah, go
all
ahead.
Right, all right, pal.
I'm about to put you in a headlock. I'm literally about to put you in a headlock and like noogie your Gru looking head. Like he really found ways to like new levels to get under your skin. Mm. Yeah.
That's crazy. That is
absolutely
crazy.
Incredible.
Stop listening to those people.
Please. Please. Another key moment that I think a lot of people were trying to decipher and everyone was deciphering it differently was his discussions about the hiring process for the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
He did not commit to Doug Christie. He did not commit to a coaching search. He said there's a couple of guys that he's talked to. He said his phone's been ringing.
Yep.
And there are people who want this job. But he also said he expects to make a decision within the next week or so, which to me eliminates the idea of a long coaching search. What was your first thought when he dropped those particular lines?
It's tough because... like you have to go back and like look at who's been a coach with him before at whatever stop. Is there a coach that he's fully connected with that he would just go, hey, I'm going to bring him in.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, you know, again, you hear murmurs and stuff like that. There's been at least some mention in around Sacramento about potential Dave Yeager return, whether that would be as an assistant or as a head coach. But again, Dave was here in Sacramento with Scott during that 2017-18 season. And, you know, there are a lot of people you can love or hate Dave Yeager. But Dave Yeager is an excellent X's and O's guy, mm-hmm. which I think is, you know, a coach. Like, I think we all know, like, if Doug Christie's a head coach, he needs at least one and probably two coaches, lead assistants, that are on a staff that have head coaching experience. And this isn't to disparage Doug at all. It's just support Doug. So like Jay Triano can be one of those, whether Jay's back or not, I have no idea. Like, again, we're not to a point where you know who the head coach is, let alone who the assistants are going to be.
Sure.
But I do believe that like having head coaching experience, because it's the one thing that I know that Doug really struggled with down the stretch was, number one, he was getting any sleep at all. And a lot of that was because he didn't have 100% trust in everyone around him because they weren't his people. They were Mike's people that were still left. And even that, he was down two lead assistants, himself and Luke Laux. So he took on a tremendous amount on himself, and that's not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Doug Christie can't hold up. No one can hold up under that kind of pressure in the modern NBA. Like, it used to be you had a head coach and an assistant, and then you had a trainer, and the trainer like literally planned all your travel, and like there's only three of you doing all of it, like coaching, taping up people, like making sure bags got on a flight, what hotel you're staying at, everything. It was just like three people. Now it's like there's so many people involved, but I don't think you can go back. I mean, like the running an offense, running a defense is so intricate. Having your offensive coordinator still there, but your defensive coordinator gone, your previous defensive coordinator, your defensive-minded head coach all gone. And, you know, Doug is a defensive guy, but at the same time, he's got to run all this other stuff. There's too many things going on. So one way or another, I really hope that if Doug does get the job, that they open up the purse strings and say, okay, like, you're going to need like a $2 million lead assistant.
Yeah.
And you're going to need like a $1.5 million second assistant.
It's an expensive staff.
Yeah, but not when you look at what the Los Angeles Clippers do. And you got Stan Van Gundy on the staff. You got like all of these guys who are great coaches.
Right.
Yeah, Jeff.
Stan's calling the game.
Oh, yeah. My bad. Jeff Van Gundy.
I got you. Yeah.
Yeah, but look at the rest of the coaching staff that they have. Not only is Ty Lue making $15 million a year, which Doug Christie's not going to make, but on top of that, they're all of these really high-priced assistant coaches. And, you know, Terry Stotts is Steve Kerr's lead assistant in Golden State. I mean, that's what it takes. You have to put your money where your mouth is. And, you know, I get, you know, if you don't want to go over the luxury tax, you know, that's one thing. But, like, if you want to skimp on your coaching staff and stuff like that, it's just not a good way to do it.
I wonder what Adrian Griffin said to Terry Stotts.
It's a great question.
Wonder what the hell happened there.
Terry said, I'm out. I am out. This sucks. And later on, Milwaukee was like, yeah, pal, you're out.
That's why I'm looking at Adrian Griffin, because like everybody was like out on that guy.
Yeah.
But no, you're right. You look at the Lakers. You mentioned the Clippers. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
As well with Jeff Van Gundy. But the Lakers have a Scott Brooks on J.J. Redick's coaching staff. And, you know, whoever that guy is.
Having that veteran,
you're on the same page.
You know, J.J., first-year head coach, that's a big deal.
Yes.
And it's way more than that. He has Nate McMillan on that staff, head coaching, all kinds of head coaching.
Yeah.
He's got Bob Beyer on that staff, who's been elevated a couple of times. He's got Greg St. Jean on that staff. Like, and Lindsey Harding on that staff. That's like a really, really good staff. That's what they need to do for him.
And here's the deal with that. I know that's going to be, I would hope that's Doug's decision, right? Who he wants to bring on if he's the head coach.
Yeah.
But now you have a guy that can help you out with that with his own relationships he has in this league. You know, I'm just throwing out a Nate McMillan. If Doug wanted Nate McMillan, but, you know, wasn't sure or didn't have contact, I'm gonna talk to Nate right now. We're gonna talk right now. You've got that guy there to help you along with that process as well, and that has those relationships. Once again, no disrespect to the man, but Monty McNair is not calling up Nate McMillan and being like, Nate, hey, you know you're my guy. We got something cooking over here.
Yeah.
Come on down to Sacramento. Scott Perry is that type of guy that if it's needed, maybe Doug doesn't need it at all, but or whoever the coach is doesn't need it at all. But if it's needed, you have that type of support system around you.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we don't know if Alvin's going to be back either. But
I sure hope so.
If Alvin is, Alvin's another guy who has like a Rolodex of names. Yeah. You know, and again, we're talking about...
He talks to all of them before the games.
Oh, yeah.
Every single one of them.
I want Alvin back, and I don't want his role to change at all.
None. Just be the guy who walks around courtside before games.
And looks cool.
Yeah, every time.
He's the coolest cat ever. Yeah, so the Clippers coaching staff, as Jay Larinaga, it's got Larry Drew, Jeff Van Gundy, Brendan O'Connor, Brian Shaw. That's what we're talking about. Yeah. Like a bunch of head coaching experience, whether it's at the G League level or the NBA level, guys with like tons and tons of experience. That's why that would really help Doug in this process. I think there are two different ways you build staffs. We've talked about this before. Like I always thought that like George Karl had a bunch of dudes who none of which were going to be head coaches, but they were all George Karl disciples, right? That's one way. Then, you know,
like Jaeger had a bunch of guys who weren't head coaches either.
Yeah. Dave,
good coaches.
Yes.
Great guys, but not.
They were all of his, the coaches he coached against in the minor leagues.
Mm.
So like they were all very, very close. They all had a very like really tight bond with all of them. And that was really nice because they were all in lockstep. So if you wanted to go talk to Big Bob Thornton, you could just walk over and talk
to him. Those guys were great. Yeah.
Yeah.
The one, I guess Elston was on his staff.
And Dwayne Tickner.
Yeah.
Yep. But again, there was a trust level that Dave had with those guys that he was okay with you talking to them because he knew you weren't going to go, you know, behind your back and say something
weird. Dwayne Tickner's going to tell you a story from 20 years ago for 40 minutes. He's not going to give you any trade secrets.
And off the charts.
Oh, it's incredible.
Oh, yeah.
There's so many twists and turns in a Dwayne Tickner story. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah, totally. But then we get to Luke
Somebody's
Walton.
Dying by the end of the story. Trust me. Somebody's dead.
Yeah. Like, but when we got to Luke Walton, Luke had done that exact same thing in L.A. Mm-hmm. and got torched killed by L.A. media for bringing in his friends. So when he got to Sacramento, he didn't want to do
bunch
it.
Bunch of randos.
He brought what was his name? Jesse Mermes with him. But that was it. And everyone else was new. And they were so awkward and out of sync with each other from the beginning.
Luke. Did Lindsay join Luke?
Yeah.
Luke had his agent when he was putting together his staff. Call a friend of mine at Wasserman who handles...
Well, like he was at Wasserman.
So that checks out. Handles the top women's athletes, broadcasters, all this stuff. He wanted a woman on his staff, but he didn't know who. Like, he had no idea who to put on that staff.
Mm-hmm.
So he was asking people, which it just shows you the level that he was going through to put together his staff. He was literally trying to add people. He didn't know.
Yeah.
He's like, I want a woman on the staff, but I don't know one. I don't know who it could be. Like, can you help? And it's not at all to suggest that Lindsay's not, you know, it's just
right. That's
how she wound up here is she was recommended by someone. Luke didn't know her. Luke had no idea who to hire for that position.
Well, remember that even they brought in Igor Kokoskov.
I remember that first season, right?
And then he left. And you know, just like that whole entire staff was just odd.
And is he back? Kokoskov's back in the NBA, right?
Yeah, he came back. Like he took a year off and then came back. They had Stacey Augmon on that staff. I forgot. And Bob Beyer was on that staff as well. But then the next year, his staff is totally different. And again, that's where like continuity of staff actually matters. And that's where again, like having Doug Christie take over a team mid-season, but a team filled with Mike Brown's coaches was very difficult.
Mm.
Like, you know, Leandro Barbosa being there and, you know, Doug makes friends and all that stuff, but
I was going to say, if I thought there was one guy he was close to, I would have thought it would have been Barbosa.
I think him and Barbosa got really close because they were on the road with Sabonis all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
and when Doug was out working out Sabonis, it was Barbosa was always the other coach out there with him.
Yep. 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 And then even when Doug took the job, Leandro had quad surgery. He tore his quad and missed a bunch of time. Mm. And then on top of that, he had a personal issue that took him out of the country for a little bit.
Mm.
So even down the stretch, there were times where Leandro wasn't available or even if he was available, he had like a full length leg brace. Like, you know, he was like immobilized. So, yeah. So just like, it's very difficult as a new coach to step into in midseason, especially a first time head coach. But then you add in all these other pieces, like, again, Luke Laux leaving. You add in the fact that, you know, this was Mike staff and, you know, Doug was a holdover from a different staff. So there's always going to be a little awkwardness there. Like, there were too many things stacked up against him. So I kind of want to see what Doug looks like with like a full summer and a full training staff and a full coaching staff and helping make some of the decisions on, you know, what players you might go after. And, you know, we hear these things like, oh, you know, Mike Brown didn't want player X or player Y. And you're like, okay, well, Doug Christie should have some of the same small amount of input. And it's not like, hey, Mike doesn't want player X, so we're not going to go get that player. It was like, hey, Mike says he would prefer not that player, but if you go get that player, he's still going to coach him. You know, so I think a lot of that is like a misconception.
We'll come back. We've got a lot more to talk about with our insider from the insiders, our man James Hamm here. Busy day, Sacramento Kings basketball. Scott Perry introduced as the new general manager of the Sacramento Kings. We'll talk more about that when D'Lo and Casey return here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. That was an eventful commercial break for a variety of reasons.
Sorry about that.
No, but it's fine,
James. No, it wasn't your fault.
It wasn't your fault. James, you've been through
it. Oh, hold on. Sasha, breakaway. Throw it down, big man. Sasha's on fire. Olympiacos up by 19.
Wow. Watching Sasha Vezenkov over here?
He's up to 18 points here in the third quarter.
He just got named all Europe? First what is team, it?
Oh, he's probably going to be EuroLeague MVP or one of them, like close to it.
Did Sasha fail in the NBA or did the NBA fail Sasha? And the NBA means Mike Brown.
Yeah. No, because like the Kings have a lot of people who work on training things, and it was just very apparent, like, very quickly that he was not up to NBA athleticism. And I think he could play, but just it was always going to be like spot minutes, and it always have to be situational, and it always have to be along like the right guy next to him. And it's just really tough when, you know, your backup centers just aren't good enough at that point, and you don't have a small forward to bring off the bench, 6'8", 6'9", is long and athletic to put alongside him to hide some of his deficiencies. I don't think he was in the right position to succeed, but I just don't think he was quick enough laterally or anything else to like stick in the league. I think he made the right decision for himself to take the $6 million to come over here to check it out and to go, okay, I'll walk away and go back over there and be a superstar again.
And maybe he wasn't, but, you know, I don't want to say there's people like Sasha all over the league on winning teams right now, but not everybody is Jaden McDaniels, right? Yeah. Like, there are guys out there that, you know, use their IQ and use their ability to think the game to survive, and I just feel like we never got an opportunity to see if Sasha was one of those guys.
Yeah, and I know he was listed at 6'9". He was 6'6.5". That's what I was told. Like, in actuality, he was 6'6.5". What I'd also, I would compare, like, if anyone watches European soccer, like, there are players who, like, get to the EPL league that were superstars in a previous league and cannot do anything at all at the EPL level. They're just not good enough. And you're like, wow, how come he can score 25 goals for his previous team, and then he gets here and like he has a tough time scoring 2 on the season. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, well, because he only has a left foot, he can't go to his right at all. And at the EPL level, you've got to have at least, you know, some skill with both feet. And you're like, oh, wow, that I don't understand how he could have made it to this level. So I think with Sasha, like, again, I don't think he was ever going to be a 25-minute per game guy in the league. Like, he's not like a Mirotić or name that European guy or like even a Davis Bertans. Bertans at least was 6'9" and, you know, shoot over the top of people. So,
James, I was going to say, as we're coming back, you've been through a number of these, be it front office, coaching, whatever, shadowy figure lurking in the darkness. Could it be different this time? Could Scott Perry be the one to maybe not a, I mean, I know some people want a complete tear down, blow this whole thing up. Could Scott be the one who just finds a way to fine tune this thing, clean it up a little bit, put a cohesive roster out there? And I mean, he said all of the buzzwords when talking about what the roster needs. He said point guard. He said athleticism on the wings. He said all of the things that make Kings fans get goosebumps. Could he be the one?
I think so. Like, look, I think every step of the way you have to learn from, you know, the previous experience. And I don't think that, like, the Wes and Monty, like, the way that Monty and Wes left this team right now, it feels like super top heavy because you have a couple of $40 million players. And it feels like it's a bunch of bad fits, right? And that's why I think basketball people should make basketball decisions, because basketball people should be able to see how a player fits without having to put them next to each other. Or they could just go back and watch clips of the Chicago Bulls for 3 years and figure out whether something would work or not. Just saying. That's why basketball people should be making basketball decisions. And those decisions, when it comes to whether you're trading a star player or not, should be made by people who are going to be there long term to deal with the ramifications of that, and that have an idea of how to clear up the mess that was made by that. And so when we hear Scott Perry say, yeah, we need a point guard, you need a point guard because somebody allowed guys that were short-termers who are literally leaving in like 8 weeks, you let them trade your best player and your star point guard, you know? And so these are things where, like, he's up against it a little bit when it comes to like the roster construction and whether he can move pieces or not. But I would say the one good thing is if you give him enough leeway this next year, he might be setting up what will be next, because, you know, you're going to start having all of your picks. You're going to start having all of this draft capital that you can play with, that you can go out and try to acquire players with, or that you can draft players with. And you're in a better position, again, when Zach LaVine has 1 year and $49 million left on his contract than you are when he's got 2 years and $95 million. And so we're going to see this thing move along pretty quickly, where if there is a problem with the roster construction, two of those pieces, the big pieces, fall off the board within 2 years in DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine. And then you got to figure out what's next, right? So I think that it feels like a weird position to be in, but it's also not the worst starting point. You have a team that all of us here thought would win 50 games this year. Or would come close to 50. We all thought it. Mm-hmm. So, sure, you have the Fox and LaVine swap out. But outside of that, I think it's, you know, there are some tweaks that could be made that make this team really good again. It's just, can you pull those off?
Those basketball people probably would have traded for Luke Kennard and had draft provisions on him for 5 years.
Yeah.
They didn't do a lot right. And those are the basketball guys. Did Scott Perry say anything that we haven't touched on that kind of stuck out to you and was like, oh, that's an interesting, you don't have to feel good or bad about it, but that's interesting, is the way he said that.
No, I think him saying that he's going to have, like, that Vivek has put his power behind him. I think that, you know, like, he will have the whatever resources he needs to make decisions, right? I think that's big. I think, like, if anything that I take away from today is that Scott Perry is still the same dude that I met 8 years ago who, like, quickly made an impression. And I think today was a day where he allowed everyone else who didn't get, like, really up close and personal conversations with him before, everyone in Kingsland just goes, huh, this guy's different. Like, he's on top of things. He knows what he's talking about. Mm. He's got ties everywhere in the league. Yeah, but besides that, I think, you know, he was as honest as he could be about the roster. He was as honest, I mean, the Zach LaVine situation where mm-hmm. he basically said Zach LaVine is probably a third option. Okay. That's fine. You can say that, but he's your second option or he's your first option. So how do you work around that? If you're the GM, how do you change that? And so, that puts a weird dynamic, but he said he talked to Zach already and that he stands behind everything he says. And
we played
stuff.
The clip. Like, he did. It's not like he called him a bitch. Like,
no,
like he, it's not like he even said he's a bad basketball player. He said he hadn't done a lot of winning. Now, whether that's fair to Zach LaVine or not, it's going to be part of Zach LaVine's story. Again, that might not be entirely fair, but it is. And then he said, he's probably better served as a third option or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's not that egregious. It's not something you can't. I don't want to say something you can't walk back. It's not like it's something you can't explain. Like, you could. I feel like if I said that about Zach LaVine on this show and he said, hey, what the hell was that you told KC the other day? I feel like I could explain it and it wouldn't be a big deal.
No,
I don't have the respect that Scott Perry has, so I still think I could pull it off.
I think it sounds similar to the things that I've said about Zach LaVine as well.
Well, future general manager James Hamm. Well,
no, I mean, there's a point in like you can't hide from an 11-year career. Like, and we can say, well, you know, did he have the team or any of that stuff? You can say all that, but at the same time, did he or did he not make the playoffs multiple times? How many playoff appearances does he have?
So I'm going to hit you back with something I don't think you're going to like.
Okay.
The focal point of that, I think the main thing in that was, like, how does Zach LaVine affect winning? Mm-hmm. Can't you ask the same question about Domantas Sabonis?
Well, Domantas Sabonis has been in the playoffs four times. Like, yeah, you can. You can ask the same question about Domas, but again, he just had a seven-game series with the Golden State Warriors.
I mean, his best numbers
ago.
Have been in Sacramento, no?
Well, I mean,
it's better than Indiana.
Well, yeah, they're...
isn't saying much.
But his numbers are consistent, like, across the board.
Oh, you mean regular season.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, his numbers are good. I'm not suggesting his numbers are bad. What I'm saying is, I think he's put up his best numbers as a Sacramento King, and he went to the playoffs one time.
Well, no, he went to the playoffs one time in Sacramento.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but he also went to the playoffs once in OKC. He went to the playoffs twice in Indiana.
I'm not giving him
OKC ain't got nothing. I'm not giving him nothing to do with him. But it's not like.
But is it because did they go to the playoffs because Domantas Sabonis was on the team?
I don't know. I mean, we can ask the same exact question about Zach LaVine. The one year he made the playoffs with Minnesota.
No, absolutely. That's my point.
Yeah,
I feel like you could have a similar conversation with both players.
Well, yeah, but I mean, there's a big difference between an 11-year career where you made the playoffs once and an 8-year career where you made the playoffs four times, or 9-year career where you made the playoffs four times. Now, did Domas perform well in the play-in game? No, he was absolutely horrible. I'm not going to say Domas had a good playoff game, but I think that might be one of those pieces that Scott Perry kind of slipped in there today, where he said very specifically, it's his job to put the pieces, and it was part of the Zach LaVine discussion.
Mm-hmm.
It's his job to put the pieces around the players that they have to support them the right way. That's like basketball basics 101. You can't go into a trade deadline knowing that you cannot compete you don't have enough depth at the three and the four, and come out of a trade deadline with Kessler Edwards, where a team gave you a second round pick so they could save on the luxury tax dollar to give you Kessler Edwards. That can't be your only move. And that's where, for me, like the holes and the problems with this roster, they just seem so simple to fix that the fact that they were not able to fix them, I don't understand it. You know,
they ain't had the right guy for the job.
Well, no, at the end of the day, that's what it appeared. But he was also the guy who was able to turn a team around that hadn't made the playoffs for 16 consecutive years and make them into a playoff team. Like the moves that he made to build Beam Team 1, spectacular. You're just sitting back going, why did you not continue your build? It's like you built like this really cool thing and then you just left it outside for it to get oxidized and fall apart and get rained on and sun beat down on it and get all cracked and stuff. You're like, what exactly just happened?
You're not wrong. I'm not picking a fight. Mm-hmm. I refuse. I'm a lover, not a fighter.
That's right.
I do see the same thing I see, probably.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Let's say this. Let's say this. What if, KC?
Come on, man.
What if you put in a pool, but then you never put any chemicals in the pool, and the cool furniture that you bought to could put around the pool, Damien, the cool furniture that you put around the pool, you don't cover up, you leave out in the rain, and then 2 years in, you're like, hey, why does that look so bad? How come my cool pool doesn't look nearly as good as it did before? Because you didn't do the basic maintenance to take care of the stuff that you did.
That's fine. Did Chicago do that for Zach LaVine?
What, like put things around?
Well,
him?
Yeah. So, the whole point was, I feel like you can make similar arguments about both guys. My frustration level with Domas is extremely high. Clearly, you pulled up the playoff stats too. I am of the belief that Domas, I lived through the Warriors series. We said in real time, Domas is not playing as bad as you're making it out to be. Mm-hmm. Of course, the offensive rebounding thing happened. That game seven happened. That's tough. You can't. This is a 16-11 series. Mm-hmm. When you look at the rest of this man's playoff series, they're not good at all. And he completely different position in Oklahoma City. He played pretty well his first playoff appearance with the Pacers. Just the point is, isn't that the case with any, you know, top tier basketball player? When you're talking about being a one or even a two, you have to have the right guys around him or them.
Well, yeah, I think you do have to have the right.
And I'm not trying to argue your point that they didn't do enough for Domas and build this team out right. That's not the point I'm trying to argue. I'm just, well, like I said, my frustration level with Domas is high.
I think the thing that I got caught up on a little bit earlier is Scott Perry said in that statement about Zach LaVine about putting the right people around him so his strengths can be magnified. And that's perfectly fair. And that's the same thing that we say about Domas, but we look at Domas and all these rose-colored glasses when we say we got to put stuff around him. But when we talk about putting things around Zach LaVine, it's, well, you got to make up for, you know, his deficiencies all the time. And I think they're closer to the same. Like, just like Zach LaVine's strengths is scoring. All right, put some guys that defend around him or put some guys that pass around him. Domantas Sabonis' strength is not scoring, but he can pass. He can do all this other stuff. Put some scorers around him. Put some, like, I think it's all about team building, and it's not that one guy is just this big problem that you got to work around, and this other guy is somebody that you should build around. That's how it comes off.
Well, yeah, I think that there's also a problem that you can't have too many guys on your starting lineup or on your roster that have to have, like, coverage in a specific way. So, like, when we talk about Domas and we talk about Zach LaVine, the players that fit alongside those guys realistically aren't different. You need long and athletic defenders because Zach isn't a great on-ball defender and team defender at the shooting guard position, and Domas doesn't have the length and athleticism to block shots, right? So if you're going to have Zach LaVine get blown by, what you don't need is for a center that can't block a shot backing him up. That's where, like, again, I think there are plenty of ways in which Zach LaVine works in the NBA, one of which is to have a shot-blocking center. Now, the problem is that's not who your center is. So that means you have to go find guys at the three and the four that can provide that same depth. And it's just like when you look at Domas, in order to maximize Domas, you have to have a four or a five or even a three next to him that can block shots, that can be an eraser, that are defensive specialists. Like people could argue with me on this, but like, OKC with Domas would be incredible. Like, because Chet Holmgren can disguise so many of the issues that Domas might have. And the same thing for Domas. Domas is a much better passer, much more physical player. He can bully people around where Chet can't and get shoved around. like there's a way in which you can just add a complimentary piece, whether it's a 5-star complimentary piece or a 3-star complimentary piece. Like when we talk about like how would James fix the Kings? Mm-hmm. I'm not sitting here saying, hey, the best way to fix the Kings is to go get Kevin Durant and then get Paul George. Like I'm not saying go get these elite spectacular, well, not anymore, but you know what I mean? It's not to go get, you know, a 5-star recruit. I say weird things like go get me Bobby Portis.
Mason Plumlee.
Well, Mason Plumlee to back up Domantas because he can pass. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, Bobby Portis, we watched him the other night. What, he hit 6 threes? Mm-hmm. You need a mean dude who can rebound, who can hit a three, and who can block a shot.
6 threes, 4 potential fist fights.
Yeah.
And who doesn't mind mixing it up.
But I think that's the point, and you talked about it. They both need, like, 2 or 3 better people around them to be effective. But one is looked at as a problem, and one is looked at as just you build around them.
Yeah.
That's the perception of the two is where I don't
see it. I understand what you're saying.
I love Domas. He's very, very good. I think he's capable of so much more than what he does. And I get cussed out when I told him to do it.
I don't know.
No,
you don't think he's capable of doing more? He's capable of being a 20-plus point per game scorer. He just doesn't. Yeah. He just won't. To me, what was it? He was like 20 this year. He was like 19. Yeah. So it's not really taking a step to say he could be 22.
Yeah.
But like he could be even more than he is, in my opinion. He just doesn't. He likes to play basketball differently. Hmm. And there are times with the Kings where it feels like that's brilliant. And then there's time for the Kings. Like, man, score. Like, you do it. Stop waiting for someone else. You do it. And he doesn't. He's going to make that extra pass to Keegan so Keegan can miss another three. Sorry, Keegan. That was uncalled for. I apologize.
I get what you're saying.
Wrong.
I also think part of his job is to do that.
No, it is. It is. Yeah. It is. He is a facilitator. Like, mm-hmm. I get that. But he's a facilitator. Like, we wondered, is Tyrese capable of scoring? We wondered that. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, obviously he can. It's never going to be his number one priority ever. Mm-hmm. Domas can do it. He does it every game. He does it. And the crazy thing is he'll score 19 on what? 9 of 11? Mm-hmm. You can't shoot 4 more times and get to, like, 24, 25?
No.
And maybe it wouldn't matter. Maybe it wouldn't matter. I just feel like you got a 25 and 13.
He's got to come from that jump shot.
I also, like, look, I don't think that they've built that team for him to be that player.
And that's the other thing.
Like, go
is
back.
Is that how Scott Perry will build this team?
Well, yeah, but even go back early in the season when Domas was averaging 21, 22 a game, you know, that changed dramatically throughout the season. As, again, you lost more and more shots to guys like DeMar, and then you bring in a guy like Zach, and, like, you start losing shots. So, I don't know. It's tough.
I don't either.
We always talk about there's only one ball, and, you know, you put Domas in a starting lineup with 4 other offensive players and his offensive production goes down, you can't question that. You know exactly why it's going down. It's going down because there's so many guys shooting the ball in the starting lineup.
He's got to work on his game.
Yeah.
He got exposed in that Dallas game.
James and Kyle have the next keyword you need for the Jump Shot Jackpot giveaway coming up at 11 a.m. tomorrow. Also, a special edition of the Insiders tomorrow at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, from 4 to 5.
That's live on the radio?
There we go.
That's Cash Creek.
Live from Cash Creek, NFL draft coverage. Who knew? There's an NFL draft tomorrow.
What? There's rumblings, too. Rumblings.
Oh,
49ers rumblings.
Can't wait to cover that tomorrow. Beginning with the Insiders, 10 a.m. right here, Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Vamos, Scott Perry.